Radio's coverage of AusCert's 2008 conference is sponsored by Microsoft. Visit itradio.com.au/AusCert08 for IT Radio's full coverage of this year's event and to hear Microsoft's AusCert presentations. Or go to itradio.com.au/security for the Risky Business podcast, honing your eardrums since February 2007.
In this AusCert talk, iPhone hacker and exploit researcher Charles Miller talks about the bug marketplace. This talk gives us a rare insight into the legal bug trading environment, which is usually obscured by non-disclosure agreements and general paranoia. Enjoy.
Against the iPhone, and the first to have a remote exploit in a virtual world, and for winning the 2008 Pwn2Own contest at CANSEC West. Without any further ado, Dr. Charles Miller.
Thanks. So, basically, I should know never follow a man in a yellow shirt. That was a great talk, and I'll try to be half as entertaining. So I got into this exploit sales thing a couple years ago because I realized that a lot of security researchers like myself, you know, knew this was going on, and it was sort of this common knowledge, but there was nothing written about it. No one talked about it, you know, openly. And so I kind of set it to myself as a goal to talk about this because it's an issue, and you know, hiding our heads in the dirt isn't the answer. So, okay, and it was a great introduction. Basically, the same stuff here. So basically, you know, this whole talk is about this fundamental question. So, some you know security researcher out in the middle of nowhere finds a vulnerability in some big application. So maybe SSH or who knows. Then they have to figure out what are they going to do with it, and you know what plays into their decision making process, and what does their decision have to do with the security of the internet in general? And do we really want this, you know, 15-year-old kid in Uzbekistan to have any sort of influence on internet security? All right, so these are some quick facts. Zero Day Initiative is a program through Tipping Point, which is owned by 3Com. They buy vulnerabilities from people somewhere around $5,000 a head. They'll do it, and this number is actually just an estimate because one of the things they make you do is when you sell something to them, you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement that says you will not say how much you got paid for it. ZDI is also the people who paid me $10,000 for breaking into the MacBook Air. iDefense Labs has had a program for even longer. They generally give you less money than ZDI. They have a special program sometimes, like the ones that I've listed there. So, you know, half a year ago or something, you could get $20,000 for a bug in like Apache or SSH. You could get $10,000 for an email server or client program. And then the other fact I put up there is the U.S. government spent like $1 million for people to look for bugs, or for Stanford and Coverity more exactly, to look for bugs in open source programs. And the question is, could they maybe spend that money, you know, in a smarter way? As it turns out, one of the case studies I'm going to talk about at the end is in a program that they looked at and they didn't find the bug that I'm going to talk about. All right, so that being said, what am I going to talk about? First, why are these researchers, you know, causing us all these problems? What are the possibilities for disclosure? What happens if the, you know, what problems are they going to run into if they don't want to disclose their vulnerabilities? And then some case studies that I've run into in this market. All right, so why do people break things? Well, maybe you're a sysadmin or a security architect or something, and you're responsible for the security of the system. Well, in that case, it's better for you to break it than the bad guys. Maybe you're a consultant like me. That's what I am. I do for a living, and people hire you to break systems. Maybe you're a researcher. Maybe you came up with some great new technique, and you want to try it out. Maybe you're just trying to get famous. Who knows? Maybe some company would claim that their product is unbreakable, but you know they would never do that. That would be silly. Maybe you have nothing else to do. Oh, wait, they did. Sorry. Yeah, that was real stupid because then people broke them 1,000 ways, including David Litchfield, who's here today. So what are the possibilities for disclosure if you decide you find something, what do you do? Well, you guys are all probably real familiar with these, but hopefully you'll get something new because I'm going to talk about it from the perspective of a security researcher. So you can not disclose it, you can fully disclose it, or you can do it responsibly. What's no disclosure mean? Well, it can mean a couple things, actually, right? It can mean, like, you just found it for fun and you don't tell anybody. Or maybe you just give it to your friends or something, or trade it or something, like, you know, baseball cards. Or, you sell it, right, and you make money from it. What are the pros and cons of this? Well, you know, the pro is, since no one really knows you're doing it, you're not going to get sued or something, so that's good. It doesn't really require any work. You know, you just do what you, you know, you don't do anything really, right? You might make money, and, you know, that's good sometimes. What's bad about it? Well, you know, it fails what I call the grandmother rule. Your grandma's not any better off for it, right? The average internet person isn't more protected because you've done this. All right, what about full disclosure? This was, like, real popular a little while ago. People thought, you know, we have to get this information out there. So basically, you just tell everybody at the same time about the problem. Maybe on, like, Bug Tracker or Full Disclosure Mailing List or something. Or you just, you know, talk about it at a conference, whatever. And the vendors don't like it when you do this. So what's the good or bad about this? Well, basically, the good news is that all this information is out there in the public, and so the vendors tend to act pretty quickly on it. So they try to get a patch out quickly because everyone knows about it. It's really easy for the researcher. You know, you just send an email or something. You can get sort of famous from doing this, or maybe it's infamous. I don't know. But people find out who you are. The bad news is that from the time you publish this information until the patch comes out, you know, everyone's at risk. And depending on exactly on how much information you give out, it could actually be almost, you know, a recipe or a proof of concept for the bad guys. Okay. What about responsible disclosure? Well, that's when you send the information to the vendor and you coordinate a release. You know, the vendor patches it, and then on the same day, you know, you get your name in a security bulletin or something. What's the good thing about that? Well, the good thing is that, you know, there's no time when the bad guys know something that when there's not a patch out. And actually, that's not entirely true, right? Because the whole time until the patch comes out, the bug's still there in everyone's program. It's just no one's talking about it. And so that doesn't mean there's not bad guys taking advantage of it. It just means it's not, you know, publicly known. And the other good thing is that you can develop, you know, good relationships with vendors for, you know, if you're a consultant, that's important. The bad thing is, you know, vendors aren't always totally cooperative. Like, you know, they have... They're trying to sell things. They're not necessarily trying to fix all their bugs. And so they might not, you know, want to cooperate with you. Big vendors like Microsoft or Apple or something, they're going to, you know, listen to you. But the smaller vendors, maybe not. The vendor might not totally understand how severe the problem is. You know, the researchers probably looked at the thing for a couple weeks. They totally understand it. The vendor, you know, they would just want to move on with life and sell stuff. So they might not understand how severe it is. And a story I like to tell is another researcher... told me this story. Trying to think of his name. It's important. Anyway, he reported a bug to a major antivirus firm in their products. He found a Stack Overflow. It, you know, if you scan a particular file, you got control of their system. And so he sent them a file that had, you know, a long string of A's. And so when you scanned it, it would fill up EIP with 41, 41, 41, 41, which is A's, right? So, you know, everyone in the security world would know, hey, that means he's got control, right? And they sent a note back, and it said, we saw your proof of concept, we ran it, and we don't think it's an issue because we looked, and there was no memory mapped at 41, 41, 41, 41. So the bad guy couldn't do anything. And it was like, oh, my God, this is, you know, a fundamental misunderstanding of security. And so now research has to spend the time to educate the vendor when, you know, they have better things to do. And the other thing that's a major issue is you're basically at the mercy of the vendor to patch at their schedule. And, you know, you can't really influence that. So maybe they say, oh, well, we have a lot of architectures. And I've been through this game a bunch of times. We have a lot of architecture. We have a lot of testing. You know, we think this is really important. We want to do it right. And maybe they'll take, you know, months. And you don't want to wait that long. And hopefully you can read that. But when might you not want to do responsible disclosure? Well, if your you know, major interest is to make sure the patches get out quickly, that's probably not the way to go. And here's an example. So this is from the ZDI website, and that means these are all vulnerabilities that the ZDI has purchased, and they've notified the vendor, but the vendor hasn't patched yet. So you can't get information about the vulnerability, you just know that it exists. And you can look at this. So, you know, these are many days. So you look at, like, you know, Symantec, 195 days. Microsoft, 374 days. You know, Computer Associates, 562 days. So some of these are, like, getting close to 2 years that the vendor's known about this and haven't patched. And these are all rated high, high severity. So, you know, if you're trying to get things patched quickly, this might not be the way to go. Also, you might be afraid you're going to get sued. So there's a great article in Security Focus about, you know, the laws of disclosure and whether you can, you know, get sued for disclosing bugs in software. You know, a vendor might say, hey, the only way you could have possibly known that is if you reverse engineered my product, and that's illegal. You know, I'm going to, you know, call somebody. So anyway, it's sort of scary. And one of the things I really want to emphasize with this little those past slides is basically, the way that disclosure works now is not ideal. It's basically broken. And summarizing that in two slides is, with responsible disclosure, you know, what do you get? Well, you get credit for it, hopefully, right? Hopefully the vendor will put your name in the bulletin. That's not always the case. You have to spend your time convincing the vendor that there's a bug that's serious. You have to wait for the vendor to fix it. And, you know, maybe they won't. And, you know, in the worst case, maybe they'll try to sue you or something, or worse. What happens if you decide to sell the exploit, right? Okay, well, you don't get credit for it, but actually that's not true. I'll show you how you can do that too. You might get a lot of money, and later on I'll show you an exploit I sold. I remodeled my kitchen with it, and, you know, my wife, you know, she likes that a lot more than my name in a security bulletin. I don't particularly care either way. And then with my money I won from CanSec, I remodeled my bathroom, so anyway, you know, you can get money for it, and you know, that can be good. You definitely don't get sued because the vendor doesn't know about it. And you don't have to deal with companies, so, you know, that's bad. The fact that, you know, from my perspective, it's better not to disclose, you know, that's an issue that we need to talk about. Anyway, so suppose then that you found a vulnerability and you're thinking that maybe you don't want to disclose it. What do you have to do to try to get paid? Well, again, like I said, just because no one talks about it doesn't mean it hasn't been happening. And for many, many years, people have been buying and selling these things legally. And I'm not going to talk about, you know, the black market or anything like that because, you know, I'm basically petrified of ever going to jail. So I would never do anything legal. I don't know anything about it. But there's programs that have been around. We've been talking about the ZDI, Zero Day Initiative, iDefense. Snowsoft is another one that was around for a while that were buying these things publicly. There's also companies that sell zero days, O days. Arginus, I think, is from Argentina. Gleg, I think they're from Russia. And Immunity's from Miami, back in my home country. So these companies, you know, presumably, they don't advertise the fact, but presumably they buy these things. Maybe other companies do as well. So then the next few slides are going to talk about, say you're a researcher, how do you try to get a fair value for what you're trying to sell? Yeah, so, and you know, most of you probably aren't security researchers trying to sell these things, but it's still just to give you an idea of what the obstacles that a researcher would face, just to be informed. The one thing that's interesting is these things are totally time sensitive. So if I have a vulnerability in Microsoft Word and patched, it might be worth, you know, $50,000 to some guy, right? But patch Tuesday comes around, they patch it, all of a sudden it's worth zero. So you've got something that can go from worth a lot of money to zero almost, you know, overnight. And not only just the patch, but other things can make it worthless too. So when XP Spec 2 came out, it made exploitation much harder. So maybe you had an exploit, and they didn't patch the vulnerability, but they made the exploit not work anymore. So that can make it worthless too. And besides Patch Tuesday, you don't necessarily know when patches are coming out. Like with Apple, just randomly patches stuff. So maybe you have an Apple exploit, and you know, you have no idea if the next day is going to be the last day or the day after that or whatever. And so the point is, if you're going to try to sell this thing, you got to do it quick. The major issue is no one really knows how much these things are worth because no one talks about it except me. These are some numbers that I've gotten from like various news articles and my own personal interactions with people. And the point to take away from this is if you find a bug in a product, especially like, say, Firefox, since Mozilla says how much they'll pay you, you don't know whether it's worth $500 or $250,000, right? And how do you negotiate with someone when there's such a discrepancy of what the value might be? All right. So the next issue is you're trying to sell this. You got to find someone to buy it, right? Well, there's not really a public marketplace for it. I'll talk about the one that does exist in a minute here. So that means you have to sort of contact a lot of people who may or may not be interested. And every time you tell somebody, it sort of makes your information a little less valuable because that's one more person who knows at least it exists. Most companies, whether they buy or not these things, they don't advertise that they do. Good luck trying to talk to the government. And one option that we'll talk about later is maybe a vendor should buy these things. All right, and another issue is suppose you actually do find someone who wants to buy it. You know, you're trying to be, do this legally, and what's legal? I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but I know I pay taxes on my stuff, right? So it's probably pretty legal. But what happens if the guy I'm selling to, I don't know who they are, right? What if they're a terrorist or something, right? And I don't want to. I told you I'm scared of jail. I'm really scared of being part of a human pyramid in Cuba, right? I don't want to be there. So how do you figure out who's legitimate and who isn't? Well, you need some sort of trusted third party for that, which doesn't exist at the moment. The other interesting thing is, how do I prove to you that I have a vulnerability or an exploit without just giving it to you? And once I give it to you, why do you buy it? Because you already have it, right? Because we're talking about information here. It's not like a product I can just take back from you. So if I tell you the vulnerability information, why buy it? And if I just want to demonstrate an exploit, that's not really any better because you might just sniff the wire or something. Even giving you like vague information might be too much. So if I tell you the version number, it works all the way back to version 1.7, right? Well, all you gotta do is look and see what changed between 1.6 and 1.7, and you know right where to look for the bug. Or maybe I say, this works pre-authentication. Well, then you just have to look at the pre-authentication code. So basically anything that you tell to a person is information that they might use. An example of this is this Wabi Sabi Lobby auction site that sells vulnerabilities. They, when they first came out, I'm going to talk about them in a minute. When they first came out, they had some vulnerabilities on their site, and they used to give a lot of information about it. And myself and a couple other guys took that information and found the bug. Right, it said there's a Stack Overflow, or no, it was a command injection in this particular, web bulletin board or something. It's like, well, you download it, and there's only like three or four places where it actually runs commands, and so it wasn't tough to figure out where the bug was. And so, that's an example of giving too much information away. And everyone I've ever seen who actually buys these things, they want to see the exploit before they'll pay you or even talk to you sometimes. So it's tough. The other issue is, most of these people, they want to buy like exclusive rights, and how do you enforce that, right? How do they know I'm not selling to 10 people? And a famous guy, Dave Itell, who buys these things, said, sometimes we get burned, sometimes not. So generally the way I know that Dave actually deals with it is he only pays a certain amount per month for like 6 months. And so if he gets burned, he only loses a little bit, not the whole amount. Okay, so what are the solutions for the researcher, not the solutions for the internet yet? I'll get to that in a minute. You can do hashing, which I'll talk about in a minute. You can do the mutually assured destruction, like that's from the Cold War, right? So if you think someone's ripping you off and you want to make sure they don't profit from you, you just release it publicly and then what they have is worthless. But of course what you have is worthless, so not so great. You can also prove that an exploit exists in person. It's kind of complicated. It involves like crossover cables and keeping hardware and stuff. But there are small things you can do. As far as research into this, there was a gentleman named Baum who wrote a paper about vulnerability markets. And he had five market types. The only one, though, that doesn't involve the vendor, so they were all mostly about vendors trying to like buy vulnerabilities and stuff. The only one that doesn't involve the vendor was called exploit derivatives. And that is still, I think it's really an interesting idea. It's basically based on derivatives, financial derivatives, which I don't know a whole lot about, just what's in his paper. But basically, it's sort of almost like betting to see whether something bad's going to happen or not, right? So if you think that there's going to be a bug released in a Microsoft product, you can bet on that. It's not betting, really, but that's what I think the stock market is. And if you think that there's not going to be one, you can also make money that way if that's correct. And the way that the researcher benefits from this is they have sort of insider information, right? They know they have a bug, and so they can buy up these derivatives and say that there's going to be something bad that happens in this product. And then they can release the information. And that way they get money. So the good news is, there's no exploits involved, right? You don't have to find anyone. It's just all through the market. And the disadvantage is it's unclear, how this would actually work. Anyway, this doesn't exist at the moment, but it might be interesting if someone would actually do it. You could sell it in an auction. And this is this Wabi Sabi Lobby. They tried this. Someone tried it on eBay, but they took down the auction. It allows some more information to happen. And it may or may not be legal in the U.S., which is the only thing I know about. I don't know about Australia either. But the Wabi Sabi Lobby actually takes place in somewhere in Europe, I think, Switzerland. Okay, so anyway, I want to talk about that. So this is a couple years ago, these guys, they came up with this auction site for exploits. And it's not taken off, really, like you might think, if this is really happening out there, right? And so I'm going to show you some statistics from the site and convince you that it's really a buyer's market. If you're trying to sell vulnerabilities on this site, it's not good news. So if you look, this is just a snapshot that I took when I was writing this paper of their website. And you can see there's, 10 or 15 auctions here going on. Not one of them has a bid, so they're all at $0. And the, buy me now thing is, and these are euros, actually, or like 500 or something. So 500, that's not a whole lot, right? My company bills that in like 2 hours of my time, and I can't find a bug that fast. Here's some more stats. So from July 2007 until today, which was actually like a month ago, 223 people submitted things to this auction site, of which they actually posted 81. So I guess that means a lot of them are just junk. Of those 81, 32 are actually sold, which is roughly 40%. So not many get sold, right? Less than half get sold. More statistics. These are all in euros. So the average price, 1,800 euros, not very much, right? The median's even lower, 650. One sold for as low as 100. The highest one was 5,000. What's really interesting, too, is of all those auctions, only 13 unique people bought things. And it might even be fewer than that. There were 18 unique usernames, right? And of those ones that actually sold, 97% only had one bid. So it's not exactly a thriving community at this point. So the question is, who actually goes to this site, right? This doesn't necessarily mean who buys the things, which they keep that confidential, but this is just from their weblogs. One of the executives from the company posted this once. Who visits the site? So basically, lots of big companies, right? Oracle, Microsoft, Cisco, IBM, and then the U.S. Army. I wonder what they're up to. Okay, so I've talked to you about reasons, about disclosure, why people might not want to disclose responsibly, what obstacles they might face, and now I'm going to talk about some things that I've actually done personally. The first involves Samba. So Samba is an open source set of programs that run in Unix and allow Unix boxes and Macs and so forth to communicate with Windows boxes over SMB. So it has a history of bugs, and I found one of these bugs in 2005, just hanging out. Actually, this was an example of the reasons of why people look for bugs. That was the last one, because you're bored. My wife had just had our first baby, and I was taking maternity leave or whatever, hanging out with the baby, and babies sleep a lot. So during the day when the baby was sleeping, I would just get bored and look at code, and I found a bug. Okay, so what's the actual bug? This is supposed to be a technical track, right? So I have one technical slide. If you can actually read it. But this is the function that has the bug. This first line, it reads in a D word from your packet into a variable called num entries, right? And then the next line, it reads in a different D word from your packet, and it stores that in a variable called num entries 2. Then it mallocs something of size num entries times something, right? And then it copies numentry 2 things into it, right? So basically you have control of the size of a malloc, and then you have control of the size of the number of things that gets copied into that buffer. And so if you make the one number bigger than the other, bad things happen. So it's a real typical heap overflow. This bug had been in the Samba code for 5 years or something. It's been there for a long time. So it makes you think, what other bugs are there, right? Because that one's pretty obvious. So what's this bug give you? Well, it's a remote pre-authentication root exploit. If your box, if you can get to that port and it's running Samba, you can get root on the box. However, any reasonable network would not allow that port in. So it's only going to be helpful to a bad guy if they're already on your network. Still, it'd be nice for them to have. What happened with me? Well, I told you I found it. And if you look into my family history, you'll see that that is the right when my kid was born. So I'm not lying. So I found it in summer of 2005. I used to work at NSA, so it turns out that once you work there, you're sort of, you're their person for life, and so everything you publish, you have to give to them first for review. So I, for 5 months, I just sat around, and I found it, and I didn't know what the hell to do with it, right? So it just sat there, and then eventually I was like, well, I had this idea of sort of exposing the vulnerability sales market, right? So I was like, well, I'll just do it, and then I'll write about it. So I submitted it to them for review in November. It took them a while, right? They're the government, and I don't know about the Australian government, the U.S. government, not speedy. So it took them 8 months, and they finally said, oh, yeah, you can talk about that. So that's there on the old timeline. So I didn't know who to sell it to, right? I had a friend from back in my government days who also no longer worked in government who sort of dealt with this sort of stuff, so I gave it to him the same day that I got the letter in the mail. Some guy, offered me $10,000 for it, and I said, no thanks. And that was, I don't have the date there, but it was sometime, within a week or something. Finally, someone offered me $80,000 for it. And I'll tell you this. So I'm talking to the guy on the phone, right? I tell him what it is, and he says, okay, how much you want for it? I was like, well, my dad told me when you're negotiating, you never give the first number, right? You always ask, right? So I said, well, I don't know. What do you want? What do you give me for it? And he says, I can't tell you that. You have to tell me what you want. And I was like, I just pulled a number out of the air. $80,000. He's like, okay. And I was like, oh, man. I totally got screwed, right? So anyway, I said, okay, I'll take it, right? And he said, oh, there's one condition, though. So my exploit worked against SUSE. He says, it's got to work against this other flavor of Linux. And I was like, well, I don't know, and I don't feel like doing it. So you try it. So I gave them the exploit the next day. I hadn't gotten anything from them. I started to get worried a couple weeks later when they still hadn't paid me or anything. So I did this thing about the hash I'll talk about in a second. Finally, I was like, I'm bailing. I'm totally scared. I'm this thing's gonna get patched, whatever. So he said, okay, I'll give you $50,000 for it, and it just as is, whatever. I said, okay, cool, take it. I got paid a little later. And then 9 months after that, someone submitted it to ZDI, and it got patched. The bad news is there was, basically 2 years where at least one person knew about it, and people were still unprotected. And that's the problem that needs to be fixed. So what's the stuff about the hashing? Well, when I got scared that they were going to just, take it from me and not tell anyone, I wanted to sort of, prove, go on record that it was mine, right? So if you can Google for this email still. I posted the full disclosure, this bogus message that I thought was hilarious, but people actually took seriously. And I included the 75 hash in the title. I mean in the my signature, right? And it turns out that if you do MD5 on that line, it says I found this bug. And that's the hash. Okay, and then here's what I bought my new kitchen with. So that's the check I got. So what happened with me? Well, for 5 months, I didn't know what the hell to do because there was no sort of system set up for it. Government slow. I didn't know what to get for it. I had to get 10% to my broker. The only reason I found him is because I just knew him. Otherwise, I wouldn't have. Again, the people I sold to, they kind of knew me, so that's the only reason that happened. I had to give them the exploit before I got anything, and it wasn't great. Running out of time, so I'll quickly run through this. So this is another example of exploit sale. This one didn't actually work out. So someone else found a bug in PowerPoint, and they wanted me to help them sell it. So guy found it in January. I offered it to the same broker friend of mine when on the 25th. Finished the exploit. Apparently, it wasn't working out with the broker, so I just started sending it to all these companies to see if they were interested. Got patched, right? So I actually came to a deal with a company, but I got beat by the patch. How much was it worth? I thought it was worth 20. I got offers like 5,000, and then the final offer that we had agreed on was 8,000, talking about up to 12, but too late. So basically, we were too slow. We weren't able to do it, which is kind of good news, right? When the people selling exploits fail, it's good. What's the implications of all this stuff? Well, researchers have to do all this stuff in secret. The buyers that buy these things for all this money, they don't disclose, right? They don't do that. And my Samba one, as far as I know, they never disclosed. Vendors don't pay researchers. Maybe they should, right? So the therefore is researchers have an economic incentive not to tell the vendor, right? Certain people are aware of vulnerable information for months in advance because of the way things are now. And it's like 0 days exist. And also, if they're not getting paid, researchers, at least the good ones, aren't motivated to find vulnerabilities. I really don't look anymore unless I think something good will come of it. So conclusions, security researchers are hurt by the market. So they got to find a buyer, figure out the price, prove that it works, and then try to actually get the money. The time sensitivity is an issue. A couple interesting things is, you know, there were 2 years that Sama bug was there, so 0 days, they exist in the wild. So they're not just, you know, smoke and mirrors. There's lots of 0 days out there. Vulnerabilities are rediscovered all the time. So this, both of those ones, actually, that I case studied were rediscovered. The implication of these markets is that the internet is less safe than if they weren't there, right? So researchers need to get paid. My final thought is that we need to make responsible disclosure easier. Like, it's a pain to deal with vendors, and it shouldn't be that way. We need to make sure researchers get their rewards. Basically, as a community, we need to make sure that responsible disclosure is like the preferred method, right? Right now, it's like you have to make a sacrifice to do it, right? It's like, well, you know, I could have gotten $50,000 or I could have gotten my name in a change log, right? So for me, it wasn't a hard decision. But we need to make it where it's like, oh, man, why would I ever sell it? It's way better to do responsible disclosure, but that's not the way it is now. My final thought. So in the Sama story, some anonymous researcher sold it to ZDI for like $5,000 or something, right? What happens if right before he did that, someone came to him and said, hey, I'll give you $80,000 for it, but you can't disclose it? You know, would he take it? Well, I don't know. But we shouldn't put this guy in that situation, right? Because it's for the greater good if you know, he does disclose it. And like I said, so internet security shouldn't depend on the result of a 19-year-old Eastern European who makes $8,000 a year having to make these kind of decisions. That's all I have, so questions. Yeah.